Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 415. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about great history, great architecture, and great music as we go to Riga, the capital of Latvia. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. The first one is an interesting and innovative idea from Alaska Airlines. They're taking that whole print your boarding pass one step further. You can print your own luggage tag for your luggage, insert it in a tag holder when you get to the airline, and save yourself some time. This is also, of course, going to save the airline some time and save them some money. So I'll be interested to see how this one works out. We had a scary news story come out this week, at least for those of us who live near San Francisco. A picture of San Francisco Airport appeared on an Al-Qaeda magazine, along with a caption reading, "Assemble your bomb." This has set off alarms, as you may expect, in Washington, D.C., and I suspect in San Francisco. In other news coming out of Washington, Brand USA is going to spend $10 million on IMAX movies of U.S. national parks. Now, I'm not always a big fan of how Brand USA has spent some of the money they've got, but I do have to say, if you haven't been to the U.S., the beauty of the U.S. national parks is a pretty darn good reason for coming. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. In the sponsor slot again today, if you're looking for a new travel credit card, check out amateurtraveler.com/credit card. You'll find cards without foreign transaction fees, and as we mentioned last week, some of them also have bonuses, such as free travel insurance. amateurtraveler.com/credit card. I'd like to welcome back to the show Spud Hilton, the travel editor for the San Francisco Chronicle, who has come to talk to us about Riga. Bud, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's always an honor.
And I say Riga, but I haven't actually put it on the map yet. Where are we talking about, Spud?
Well, we're talking about the capital of Latvia. Latvia is one of those Baltic nations, along with Estonia and Lithuania, that because they were part of the Soviet Union for so long, Americans tend to not consider them. Americans say, oh, well, that was behind the Iron Curtain. It must just be full of
gray, nondescript buildings
exactly.
And gray, nondescript people.
Exactly. That's pretty much it. And as it turns out, you could pretty much not be further from the truth. What people tend to forget is that, yes, they were behind Soviet oppression for a while, but they were also medieval cities. Tallinn and Vilnius and, in this case, Riga were all medieval cities that have cobblestone streets and cathedrals and incredible architecture and things like that, just like any major city in France or England or somewhere else. But they're just not on the U.S. radar. And so that's what made me want to go.
Well, and this is the capital of culture for 2014 for Europe, as I understand.
Yes, it is. I would love to say that I was being really smart and on the ball by deciding to go there because of that, but I didn't find that out until I actually got there.
And why should someone go to Riga, and what should they do?
Well, I think if nothing else, it's a very affordable European destination that gives you a completely different view than Western Europe. I mean, technically it is sort of Western Europe, but the Baltic states, because of all the different influences, I mean, basically all three of those countries have been run by a laundry list of other countries. At one point, the Latvians have been basically overseen, so to speak, by Swedes, by the Poles, by the Germans, by the Russians, you name it. And somebody in this area has sort of had to oversee Latvia and specifically based in Riga. Well, that's good and that's bad. The good news is that each one of them put their own imprint on these cities. So they're not only really European, but they're actually sort of more expansively Europe than a French city might be, or than a British city might be. Riga itself, the town, the old part of town, used to be a walled city in the 1200s.
Mm-hmm. A Hanseatic League city.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Cobblestones, the whole nine yards. No street that actually goes in a right angle or anything.
Right, right.
That's how you always tell medieval cities, is because there's no grid whatsoever. It's all horse cart paths and things. Anyway, at some point, the Swedes were running the joint, and they decided instead of having a big wall at this spot, they were going to build a moat. Well, as it turns out, that moat today is the canal around Riga that leaves both ends of it touch the river Daugava. And the canal is wonderful. I mean, it goes through these beautiful parks. It actually goes underneath a shopping mall, but it goes back out to the river. And for the equivalent of about $10, you can take this great boat tour in these small boats that only carry about 10 people out around the canal and out into the river and then back in again on the other side of the canal. So you get really sort of a bigger impression of the place. The history is phenomenal. I mean, just trying to keep track of the history. They've got some great museums that not only track Latvian culture, but of course, they've also got the Museum of the Occupation, which was taking basically an old Soviet government building. I mean, a really ugly block Soviet government building, and turning it into the Museum of Occupation, basically talking about both the Germans and the Russians having run the joint for a while, and the atrocities involved and the ups and downs. The interesting thing to me is in 2014, along with the capital culture thing, is they're finally, after several decades of being free of the Soviet oppression, they're finally turning the secret police building that's on the same square as the Museum of Occupation. It's this pretty much an abandoned building. No one will go near it. They call it the Ghost Building. But they're finally turning that into a museum that talks about the secret police presence that was there and how many Latvians basically went into that place and never came out, and how many people were tortured. And they're also using certain floors of it as art galleries to sort of reflect some of the history and things like that. It's overall, I think the reason to go is because it's going to defy your expectations of a former Soviet socialist republic. You're going to go and you're going to expect one thing, and you're going to find a tremendous European city with a lot of history, a lot of great architecture, and great music. If you can find the right place, which it took me 4 days to do, you find the right place, there's great music there.
So what kind of itinerary would you recommend for Riga?
It's pretty easy to get to from Frankfurt, which is central to most flights in Europe. Mm-hmm. And I think itinerary-wise, it'd be worth spending about 4 days to get the flavor of the old town area, soak up the architecture, things like that, do some of the tours, check out some of the museums, things like that. Spend a day going out beyond the old town area because there's an entire neighborhood that is one of the best known spots for Art Nouveau in all of Europe. They had a crazy guy. I mean, he was absolutely certifiable, named Mikhail Eisenstein. And he basically offered to design people's buildings for free as a hobby, and was going with sort of what he had learned about Art Nouveau. And these things are off the chart, wild buildings. I mean, it's a stately building from a distance. You look close and It has all these incredible faces and eagles and Egyptian symbols and all sorts of bizarre things. You start going out from the Old Town area and you could spend half a day just looking at the Art Nouveau buildings and going to the museum there for that. You could spend half a day at the Central Market. The Central Market is essentially one of those holdovers from the Soviet era where everybody went to the same place to get their meat for the day, their fish for the day, everything like that, and hit all of the sort of farmers market-like stalls. Well, it's all still there, and it's one giant sprawling place where you can get anything fresh. And in general, you can pretty much communicate almost anywhere.
Okay.
Now, I'm saying pretty much because while there is a certain amount of English spoken, over the years they've adopted a lot of English. They worked with England in the early part of 1900s a lot as a trade partner. So most places you can get by without having to know any Latvian, which I tried to learn on the plane. Not an easy language, let me just say that. But it's actually a lot of fun to go through the big market stalls at the Central Market and just sort of look at that. You can spend half day doing that. Even a little bit farther out, there's if you go work your way out in concentric circles, you can find a lot of the buildings that were reused. There's a lot of stuff that was reused for the Soviet era and then reused again from Soviet era back to Latvian era. Mm-hmm. So for instance, you've got the Orthodox cathedral that, because you couldn't have an Orthodox cathedral under Soviet rule, got basically turned into a planetarium. I'm sure it was great as a planetarium, but it's now been turned back to the Orthodox cathedral, and it's just beautiful. They've restored all the frescoes and things like that. I think a good solid 3 or 4 days would give you time to get a solid flavor for the town. I would try to get another place in the Baltics along with it. So say you're going to spend a week to 10 days in the Baltics. I would actually try to hit Vilnius or Tallinn and Riga. For what it's worth, the bus system is actually pretty good. There's not much in the way of trains in Latvia because they dismantled most of their train system. But the bus system is great, runs on time, gets you there efficiently, and it's cheap. It is just cheap. So if you were going to go to Tallinn or to Vilnius from Riga, it's less than a $20 bus ride. So I would try to pair those up.
What surprised you with Riga?
I think the same thing that I was encouraging other people to find out, which is it defied my expectations. What surprised me was I, too, had gone into this thinking, okay, former Soviet buildings, gray square block buildings, and everyone depressed and blah, blah, blah. Well, as it turns out, not only is there all this beautiful architecture and great history, but Riga, for a while, in part because of the Brits and in part because of the Germans, got turned into a inexpensive stag party area.
Oh.
Where basically a lot of different cultures go to Riga to have their big bachelor parties. I don't know if that's because there's a lot more clubs than there are in most places, or if there's a few strip clubs. I didn't really count that many. But whatever it is, there seems to be a demand for that type of thing in both Lithuania and Latvia. And so there are clubs, there are nightclubs, and a few of them are sort of authentically Latvian clubs. I mean, they're hard to find, but you go in there and everybody knows each other and the band is Latvian music and it's all terrific.
And these are the ones you said it took you a few days to find.
It took me a few days to find. It's okay. One of these sort of catacomb like underground clubs that just seems like a place where you're going to go to hear Latvian folk music. And amazingly enough, and he actually denies this based on the photo I took, but the lead singer for the band that was there that night looks an awful lot like the writer David Farley. So I had a double fun evening of making sure to go up afterwards and pose with this band guy and make sure to send the picture to David Farley, the writer. So.
And it sounded like it wasn't Latvian folk music?
It was Latvian.
It was Latvian folk music. Okay.
Yeah, but Latvian folk music modernized to some extent. So in other words, you've got a sort of full rocking band, but they also have an accordion or they also have a violin. It was just a really nice evening down there.
Well, let's get back to what are the expected places that I should see. If I look at the guidebooks, they're going to tell me to go to these places, and you completely agree with them. You've got to do...
You have to do the Old Town.
Okay. Assume that, right? But where in the Old Town?
Well, the former walled city is going to have a just massive main square that the cathedral is on. And the cathedral's right next to their best museum, which you wouldn't think is that huge, but goes on and on and on. It's absolutely a phenomenal museum. Once you're in that main square, because it's a medieval city, the roads lead off of that square in about 9 different directions. Mm-hmm. So it's impossible to sort of give directions in general, but you head down any one of those toward the river, and the riverfront is wonderful just for sort of hanging out on and watching the boats. And it's an industrial port on one end. And they actually do get cruise ships now, that more cruise ships are starting to do Baltic itineraries. But once you've seen the larger old buildings, you just want to wander the alleys in that medieval city because you're going to keep running into things that you're just amazed are there. Although at the same time, when somebody was giving me a tour about all the Art Nouveau, one of the first buildings they took me to is they took me to this building and pointed up at the Art Nouveau above it. And I looked at the first floor and it was a TGI Fridays. So they do have commercial chains. They do have touristy facilities. And yeah, they get a certain crush of tourists, but it's not that hard to get sort of out of that same way by just wandering the small streets, the medieval streets and alleys. You definitely want to take one of those boat tours around the canal. That was without a doubt wonderful. You definitely want to go out to the central market. Those are all things that you're going to see for the most part in the guidebooks. And right. I absolutely agree.
And then flipping that on its head, the ones that you see in the guidebook that you would say just pass.
I think a lot of the sort of party aspect
Wasn't your scene?
Wasn't really my scene.
Didn't have a lot of Dixieland band.
Yeah, not too many New Orleans traditional jazz bands in Latvia, apparently.
Which Spud plays in a Dixieland band is why I'm not just pulling that out of the air here for those of you who are wondering where that is coming from.
It's not as much of a non sequitur as it
as you might think.
Yeah, exactly. Oddly enough, they do have early New Orleans traditional jazz bands there. Mm-hmm. I just wasn't there on the right nights and I didn't take my cornet. So I figured I'd try to sit in somewhere, but that didn't work out. I think the overall sort of party scene, the club scene, is not only a little too brassy, a little too young, a little too whatever, but it's also run almost entirely by Russians. During certain parts of the last century, Russians were the dominant population in Latvia and Riga specifically, and that sort of turned around over the last 20, 30 years. But they still own a lot of the businesses, and most of the entertainment businesses are Russian-owned. And that's fine, but there's a certain edgy tourist beware type of situation where you might find yourself buying a drink for somebody, and that drink is $150.
Oh, that old scam. Okay.
Yes, there seems to be a lot of that. So you need to be aware that the brassier, younger end of the nightlife in Riga has its pitfalls and to be careful about that. That said, I actually spent one evening doing almost nothing but watching what is probably the most popular rockabilly band in Latvia. There's a sentence you don't hear very often.
No, I was trying to think that I was surprised that it isn't by default the most popular. There are more than one?
It's entirely possible that there's more than one. I asked about if there were any others, but I don't think they understood what I was asking. So we didn't really go there. But they love music. They just love music, and you're going to find it almost every direction you turn. The food sort of runs the range because they're getting a new sort of infusion of great restaurant chefs from elsewhere or Latvians who are coming back, who have been elsewhere and are bringing new ways to prepare stuff. But honestly, almost every Latvian I asked said, our food has never been good. We were farmers. We basically ate meat and potatoes. And there are a few places that really hold that up. Although it was only when I went to, there's a chain of restaurants called Lido, Big Lido, Little Lido, L-I-D-O. And they're basically, it's kind of like a Sam's Hofbräu. It's you go in and you line up with your tray. You say, I want some of that and I want some of that. And I didn't actually know about half the things I was asking for, but they looked good or they smelled good. And it was all traditional Latvian food. It was just wonderful. I had a ball eating there, and it was cheap because it was intended for locals.
Right. Besides the don't buy the pretty girl who's coming on to you in the bar a $100 drink, any other warnings you would give about Riga?
I think there's an easy tendency to worry about safety, because the old portion of the town is a medieval city and it's dark alleyways and things like that. And of course, you're always going to want to make sure that you're not in a situation, any traveler doesn't want to be in a situation where you're helpless. That said, I think you can probably go a lot more places and still be safe in Riga than some of the books would lead on. I think there's a tendency that Latvia actually likes having tourists who aren't the rowdy drunken types. And so when I sort of presented myself as the non-rowdy drunken type, whether accurately or not, I made friends fast and was able to find out about other things I hadn't seen or that I should see, things like that.
Well, you can't just leave that lying there. That brings up two questions. One is, who did you meet, or who would you love for people to meet who you ran into? And two is, what kind of secrets did you learn?
There was a guide who I talked to at length while she was showing me around. She was actually working for somebody who used to be with Hewlett-Packard, who now lives full-time in Latvia because he married his wife and went there. And he suggested this guide who I spent the better part of an afternoon with. And her experiences, she could point to buildings and she could tell me about neighborhoods. The things that were fascinating to me were listening to her talk about being a child and growing up under Soviet rule, and then having Latvia for Latvians, having sort of a clean slate to start with and say, okay, what is it we want to do? What is our country now? Who are we? And that was an enlightening conversation. I really got a lot out of that.
And then you mentioned secrets.
I don't know if I would exactly call it a secret, but one of my favorite things is that the Radisson Blue Hotel in Riga used to be one of the only hotels that foreign visitors could stay in, especially Western visitors.
So it was the one with the walls all wired up for sound.
That's exactly what I'm thinking, is that the whole place had to be bugged 10 ways from Sunday.
Probably.
But it's actually one of the nicer hotels in town now. And on the top floor, 26th floor, there's a bar called the Skyline Bar. And it's by far the best view. So if you're going to do sunset or just go up during the day and get a view during hours that it's open, that's the best place to see the lay of the land. It might be one of the things that you do the first day or so that you're in town, just sort of get an idea of where all things are and how far they are.
And I'm going to picture that's just outside of the medieval town area?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it's a few blocks. It's probably about 5 blocks outside the medieval town. It's across the canal and past the Monument of Freedom, the great Monument of Freedom that was put up in the early part of the 1900s. But despite the fact that they were pretty much run by the Soviets were smart enough not to take down the Monument of Freedom. Because I think they would have run into some problems if they had tried that. Black Balsama is essentially the Riga-made liqueur. It's basically their version of a Jägermeister. And honestly, it's not all that different from Jägermeister, only it's more bitter. So in general, if you're going to drink the local drink, that's the stuff. But they'll ask you if you want to mix it with currant, black currant, and you should. Also, it works pretty well with Red Bull. But then again, I think everything works well with Red Bull. Well, so
we won't get into that. That's more something for your therapist.
Exactly.
You're standing in the prettiest spot in all of Riga. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I think you're standing on the main square.
Okay.
Because, again, you look in every direction and you're going to see down some street that isn't straight. It's going to be some crooked street. And you look down that way and you think, well, I can't see what's down there. I need to go down there. But it's cobblestone streets in every direction. And it's the cathedral right there. And it's what used to be some of the old 18th century banking buildings and things like that. There is almost always musicians and performance tents and things like that going on in that main square. And while it gets a certain amount of tourists, that's probably one of my favorite spots that I spend a little time just sort of looking around. There's an interesting piece of history. One of those sort of secrets that you learn is Riga in history had three things that you needed to be able to tell somebody you'd seen in order to prove you'd been to Riga. So,
all right.
A long time ago, people would say, oh, I've been to such and such. And people would say, well, prove it. What are the three things? And apparently the three things in Riga are a floating bridge, which isn't there any longer. The big Christopher statue. It's not St. Christopher. It's this sort of odd legendary giant named Christopher who is credited in the founding of the town somehow, and they have a statue of him.
Okay.
But the one I love best is the bell roof. There's a church steeple that has a bell on the side of the steeple, not at the top, and it has its own little roof. And it's an architectural quirk that nobody knows exactly why it was there. But it's one of the things you have to be able to say you'd seen. Well, the interesting thing about that bell is at some point in Riga's history, the legend was that any time a sinful woman walked past the church, that bell would ring. So at some point in Riga's history, all the women of the town got their money together and paid to have the bell taken down.
Yeah.
I think there's a metaphor there somewhere, but I'm just not going to go there. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Funny. I've got just three more questions for you, but before I get to those, what else should we know before we get on Baltic Air and go to Riga?
You should know that they're now on the euro. While I was there, I was actually spending in Leeds, which the exchange rate was actually pretty good. But they are now on the euro and makes it a little bit easier to not have to exchange money when you're going in and out. Because my trip was into Latvia and then over to Lithuania and then back out to Germany. And I had to change money three times. They're now on the euro and they are part of working that into full
partnership in the EU.
Full partnership in the EU. So there's going to be a little more standardization than there was even a couple years ago. They really are planning for that Capital of Culture thing for 2014. They're putting out entire websites that are, here's all the things that we're going to be doing in the coming year that will really sort of prove we have a culture worth checking out. So that's something for sure that I think people ought to know. I think people ought to know that it is worth talking to people, if you can, just on the street, because everybody is a little bit guarded. But if you're not showing yourself to be one of those sort of drunken rowdy types just there to do stag parties, they are interested in telling you about their town. They are interested in telling you a little bit about their history. It just takes a little bit of getting through because, again, we're talking about entire generations who didn't talk to strangers and for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worth meeting people and trying to sort of casually strike up a conversation if possible because once they do sort of get past that initial trepidation. They're wonderful people, and they really do love their country.
Excellent. Last three questions. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Riga.
I think probably for me, I think that bell.
That was probably your answer, but
that bell has to be it. I mean, it's basically the idea of a separate bell on the outside of a steeple that has its own little sort of rain catch roof to it, and that nobody can sort of explain why it's there. That seemed to be one of my favorite only in Riga type of situations.
And finish this sentence. You really know you're in Riga when. What?
You really know you're in Riga when you walk down the main street that has 8 or 9 Eisenstein architecture buildings, because you cannot be anywhere else in the world and see these sort of, they called him a wedding cake designer. I'm sure there are architects who believe that he was just absolutely out of his mind, but the bizarre nature of these things, the over-the-top nature of these things is just gorgeous. But this is the only place that you can find that kind of concentration of this kind of Art Nouveau.
I'm getting the sense that as Gaudi is to Barcelona, Eisenstein is to Riga.
Yes, that would be an accurate depiction.
Okay, excellent. And if you had to summarize Riga in just 3 words, what 3 words would you use?
Medieval, European, and unexpected.
Okay.
Unexpected.
Excellent. Spud, where can people read more about your travels?
Well, if you're in the Bay Area, you can usually read about my travels either in the San Francisco Chronicle travel section, which comes out on Sundays, or on the Bad Latitude travel blog that's at SFGate or at the travel pages at sfgate.com.
And we should say that you don't have to be in the Bay Area to read the online.
Right, exactly. Hopefully you can read those just about anywhere you have a connection. The online is just sfgate.com/travel or sfgate.com/badlatitude. And those are usually the best places to find me these days.
Excellent. And I didn't mention that Spud has been on the show once before, and that was talking about Gibraltar. So if you enjoyed listening to Spud, you can go back and check out that episode as well. Spud, thanks so much for coming back on the show and telling us about your travels to Riga.
Thanks for having me. I always appreciate it.
In news of the community, I got a tweet last week from Don Chiasson, who had this comment on the Nova Scotia episode. Nailed it. She's right. Explore by car off the beaten path. We are proud to show off Nova Scotia. Also, we consider Toronto Central Canada. I also saw this comment on 44parksandtraveler.org. When I run at home, I usually listen to sports or travel podcasts. My favorite travel podcast is The Amateur Traveler with Chris Christensen. Today, my loyalty to the program proved invaluable. Months ago, I was listening to a segment in which the guest discussed Ho Chi Minh City, and they stressed the procedures for pedestrians to cross the street among the myriad of scooters, motorcycles, and cars. She said to step into the street bravely and continue without changing speed, and the variety of motor vehicles will make their way around you. As you can see, it was great advice. In the show notes, I'll put a link to that blog post. Our guest on that episode was Jody Edinburgh of LegalNomads.com. I also heard this from Skip, who said, I'm a longtime listener to your Amateur Traveler podcast. I'm going on a cruise south, fly north to Antarctica, starting in Ushuaia, Argentina, in January 2015. As I planned my trip, I thought about stopping in several South American countries along the way. However, I've discovered each country has expensive visas required for American citizens. $160 here, $160 there can really add up. Perhaps you could occasionally ask your guest about entry visas and exit fees that travelers can expect to pay. Keep up the good work. We try to cover those when appropriate, like Sudan, I remember mentioning that. But that is a good reminder. Many, many countries, if not all the countries in South America, have had a $160 visa processing fee put on their citizens by the United States, and they have retaliated by doing the same. One interesting thing, as I told Skip, is that if you're going to the World Cup in Brazil, and you have tickets to the game or are going to compete in the game, that visa fee is waived. So something to keep in mind. If you're someone who uses the SpringPad app, and that may be something you might want to consider using, we're doing a co-promotion this week. They're doing an article also on some of the advantages of going to Riga and about this Amateur Traveler episode. One of the reasons they're doing that is for people who subscribe to that application, there's an Amateur Traveler notebook that you can use to keep track of some of your travel ideas. And perhaps as we inspire you to travel with various episodes, that might be a place to put them. So springpad.com to check that out. And I'll put a link to the specific article again in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. Remember credit cards, amateurtraveler.com/creditcard. You can join the Facebook community, follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. Show your love for The Amateur Traveler by going to amateurtraveler.com/love, which will pre-populate a tweet for you. If you have any questions, drop me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or leave a comment on this episode again at amateurtraveler.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening.